Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Webcology. It's the 12th of 2008. Well, it's 12th of June already.
I know. It's, well, I got kids about to leave school now and pal around for the whole summer. So, you know, might mean a little more to me than some other people because that's, you know, something.
We have an amazing, tremendous, controversial show coming up today. Before we jump in, I want to apologize for last week. Dave and I were likely sick to the gills coming back from the Search Marketing Expo Advanced in Seattle. Not sure where you were at 2 p.m. Eastern last week, Dave, but I was on like a ferry boat. It was more like a roller coaster.
Yeah, no, that was a fun ride home.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
That was a great conference, eh? What'd you think?
I thought it was phenomenal, like a great opportunity to chat with a lot of really interesting people who have some totally different insights on different areas. You know, we all obviously kind of specialize in specific things, and getting a chance to chat with one of the more notable, you know, to me anyways, was chatting with or watching the chat between John Glick and Cindy Crum, and you know, eyes lighting up as they geeked out about local mobile, stuff like that, and just getting to take all that in and get a different take on different things that I might not be monitoring as closely because it's not my core area of expertise. So really neat, and that certainly wasn't the only one. There was a bunch of great networking, a bunch of great people, and a really good time.
And actually, one of our guys from MetaMend, Colin Cochran, actually ended up stealing the algorithm from Matt Cutts. He's got a picture of himself stealing the algorithm up on his blog, ColinCochran.com. And he was secretly handed the Microsoft Live algorithm by Jeremiah Andrick, which I thought was a nice move on Microsoft Live's part.
Well, and Jeremiah's, had a chance. You know, obviously, we both had a good chance to chat with him, and he definitely represents his company very, very well. A really good guy, and manages to, keep things behind closed doors, but still be accessible and happy to answer some the questions that he can. I was really impressed with him as well.
Total class act, amazing fella. Oh, hey,
yeah.
Speaking of class acts. They're going to be Twittering our show today because, as I said, this is probably the most controversial Webcology we've done yet. But, of course, Twitter is, like, overloaded. Speaking of class acts there, eh? And, actually, speaking of class acts, sad news for Yahoo today. It was announced that probably their very best blogger, Jeremy Zodney, has left the company.
Yeah. Now I didn't know about that until just a few minutes ago when you happened to mention it on IM to me, and that's what's next for him? What do you think?
I have no idea.
And then what's next for Yahoo?
Next for
how are they going to replace him?
He's a former Yahoo. He's a former Yahooite. He's in the Silicon Valley. My guess is he's going VC.
Now, what do you think is going to happen to? Will they be able to replace him? Is this just kind of? Again, the beginning of the end for Yahoo here.
All bets are off until August 1st. Honest to goodness, we've analyzed the Yahoo situation to death on this show. Danny Sullivan's analyzed it to death. I think every Webmaster Radio show has had something on the demise of Yahoo. Every Webmaster Radio show has covered the demise of Yahoo, and really, honestly, we're not going to know anything until August the 1st. When we do find out, it'll be an interesting day. It's questionable whether Jerry Yang still even has a job afterwards. So we'll see what happens. Incidentally, whoever just phoned me on my cell phone, sorry, somebody keeps phoning me, and people know not to call me during this hour, so I just picked up my cell phone and talked into it as well as the microphone, so I hope they understand what we were talking about. Apparently not. It may well be an emergency. Anyway, I'm going to ignore that, and I'm going to keep right on going. We have another conference coming up next week, Search Engine Strategies Toronto. That is going to be a fun show. It's probably the smallest of the major search engine strategy shows, but it's definitely the most intimate. Dave, unfortunately, you're not going to be there.
I won't be there, and that is a real. I mean, these are, you know, you got to, as you know. Well, you don't. You go to all of them, but you know, I've got to choose which ones I go to, and it was just coming too close after SMX to attend. But you've got a couple speaking engagements there as well.
Yeah, I have two speaking engagements at SES Toronto. The first one is a panel called Beyond Linkbait, how to get authoritative online mentions. That's going to be a great panel. I'm really looking forward to that. And the second one that I'm going to be doing is a site clinic panel. That's huge fun. That's almost as fun as doing a live Webmaster Radio show as we're doing right now. My cell phone went again, so I just was talking to it. I'm going to be doing a site clinic panel, which is enormous fun. You see, you have no idea what's coming at you when you're doing site clinics. Okay, Dave? Could you do me a favor? Can you carry the show for a half second? Honestly, I'm going to answer this call.
You answer the call. Okay, that's an interesting little segue. Gotta love live radio. Yeah, it is. It stands to be a good one. I don't know if our listeners here are going to be able to actually, or how many will be able to attend the Toronto one, but. For anybody who can, it has a completely different feel if you've attended the other SES events. Has a completely different feel. It's much smaller, much more personal than other events, as I'm sure Jim can attest to. And there's much more opportunity to interact. You know, not there's any shortage at most of the SES events, but much more opportunity to interact with the speakers and other notables that'll be present. Just to get the opportunity to, you know, if your questions weren't answered in, say, on Beyond Linkbait, on Jim's session, to get a chance to chat with him and get that sorted. But he's also totally right. We've got a phenomenal show coming up. I don't know if I should wait for him to come back to kind of introduce the show and see sort of note who's going to be coming on. So I will. I guess I should just sort of keep that and let him launch into it. But it is going to be a great show. It'll be covering some of the interesting points of Wikipedia, which should be interesting to all of our listeners here.
Hey, Dave, okay.
It's going to be a great show. I can't wait till we get going. Hey, George, could you do me a big favor? Could you IM me the number for the call in? One of our guests is actually on my cell phone, and she doesn't have the number.
Absolutely.
Live radio, friends. Okay, while we're waiting for the number to be IM'd over to me, which I will then transfer to our guest, I'm going to do a quick intro on the show. Actually, I'm going to pass the number first, then I'm going to do the quick intro on the show. The number is 1-866-916.
Gotta love it. Oh, but by the way, if you're going to mention SES Toronto, you want to mention that our own Brian Eisenberg will also be keynoting there at the event.
Absolutely. Well, I guess I don't have to now because you just did.
And for anyone attending, if you haven't heard Brian speak before, you seriously, you got to hear this guy talk. He's an incredible speaker. Okay, friends. We have, as I've said, this is live radio, so things happen. We have a great show coming up for you. The people have heard about issues that Wikipedia administrators and editors face when it comes to harassment. Recently, a very well-known editor from Wikipedia had to felt moved to resign his position. This was a fellow who took it upon himself to actually go out and interview people. to go out and take his own photographs for the entries that he was putting into Wikipedia. This is one of the guys who really cared about making a quality resource. And one of his several Wikipedia users took it upon themselves to harass this man, to threaten his family, and to push him to the point where he felt he could no longer be to participate in the Wikipedia project. We also have one of the more controversial administrators from Wikipedia, Lisa Bohr, a.k.a. Durova. She's going to be on the show, joining our other guest, David Shankbone. We're going to be getting to them in a few moments. We have a few technical issues to work through. We're going to be cutting to commercial, but friends, stick around. There's going to be fireworks in about 2 minutes here on webmasterradio.fm.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
SEOseek.com is your one-stop site for everything SEO. From search engine marketing to pay-per-click management, SEOseek.com delivers high-quality SEO services at affordable prices. SEOseek.com can help you with SEO analysis, monthly reports, title and meta tag optimization, email support, and so much more. Want to keep your SEO in-house? Let our professional trainers teach SEO to your staff. Get a free quote and a free competitive analysis today at SEOseek.com.
Hey, what's that sound coming from your computer?
That's the sound of me making money with referback.com. They've shown me how to... Referback.com show me how to turn clicks on my existing site into cash. Referback gives you free banners, mailers, even your own personal account manager.
Oh, can they help me make money off my blog too?
Absolutely. Your websites, your blogs, they can all be making you money. You can even earn 50% commission on your first month. Put some into your website. Just visit referback.com.
FriendFinder.
FriendFinder.
The world's largest online dating network.
Featuring over 100 million profiles.
At hot sites such as Passion.com and FastCupid.com. Represents enormous profit-making opportunities for webmasters just like you. With FriendFinder's ability to geo-target and provide billing solutions in most languages and currencies, you are sure to find our comprehensive network to be a good friend
to your wallet. Get more traffic-maximizing details now
at FriendFinder.com.
PPC Rockstars. Get ready to rumble through the latest PPC news and views from around the blogosphere. Learn from our host, David Zatella, and the PPC pros that will take you to the promised land of PPC profit. PPC Rockstars. Live broadcast Mondays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the advertising channel. Only on webmasterradio.fm.
WebmasterRadio.fm is now on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. Get out your spray paint and put your graffiti on our wall. Get all the details on the WebmasterRadio.fm homepage.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on WebmasterRadio.fm. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Yeehaw, friends. Welcome back to Webcology here on webmasterradio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from BeanstalkSEO.com. And we're joined by two of the most interesting guests we've had on in a long time. As I said, this is going to be a nice and controversial show. David Shankbone, former editor and administrator from Wikipedia, and Lise Bohr, also known as Durova, also a former administrator from Wikipedia. Both of you, welcome to Webcology on Webmaster Radio.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Jim.
I guess this is a really complicated issue. This is a very difficult one to tackle. So I think the easiest way is for each of you to really quickly explain the situation. David, you wrote an article that got published in the Brooklyn Rail last week, Nobody's Safe in Cyberspace. Could you just really quickly cover that article?
Sure. The article basically tracks why I started working on Wikipedia 2 years ago, the things that I accomplished for the site, and then sort of the unfortunate end that that my tenure on Wikipedia met. Which was in the guise of an internet stalker who took issue with the person who's known as New York's gay porn neocon kingpin, Michael Lucas, that is. I had met him at a party. He had asked me to fix a couple of errors on his page. We had the wrong last name for him. It wasn't a last name that came out of thin air. It was actually his father's name, so it's understandable that somebody would have believed that that was his birth name, but he was never given that name at birth. And so he supplied his birth certificate, which I photographed for the site, along with two different passports, one his Soviet passport and the other his American passport, that showed his correct birth name. And so I made that correction. The other thing was a piece of semantic minutia, is the article had described him as being a prostitute in his early 20s, and he had preferred the term male escort, which is I didn't think that that was a big issue to make that change. After I made those two changes, a person who has an IP address registered in Northern New Jersey took extreme issue with this. Now, in my research, I found that this IP range that had been working on the gay porn articles on Wikipedia, which is not an area that I usually ever touch. As a matter of fact, I think the Michael Lucas was the first time I'd ever ventured into that area of Wikipedia, and he had been at least for a year changing these articles to his point of view, which was a very negative view of Michael Lucas and the people who appear in his movies. So my making those two changes sort of upset, I think, some sort of power base that he had on a basically area of Wikipedia that's not heavily trafficked.
And so you made the change, he was offended, and he starts going after you.
Yeah, and the first thing that he did was I had recently gone to Israel to interview their president, Shimon Peres, for the site, and also to do some photography. I photographed a lot of the country for a lot of the Israeli pages. One of my photos went up on Orthodox Judaism on that article, and it's of an Orthodox couple. And unexpectedly, that was a somewhat controversial photograph, I think mainly because it showed a woman in it. I think that there are some issues with that. I'm not really quite sure, not being Jewish myself. And so he sort of latched onto that argument to argue against my photograph. Then he went over to at least two or three different administrator boards, the Conflict of Interest Board and also the Admin Notice Board, and started arguing against the changes that I made. So the community actually looked at what his issues were, and they decided that he was wrong, which just infuriated him. And it seemed, I'm making a conclusion that it's a him, by the way. And so he ended up over the next several months, repeatedly raising these issues. Then he started disguising his identity. I'm known for photographing authors here in New York, he went on as an anonymous author, and basically said that I had gummed up the entire literary publicity machine in New York City. That authors were afraid to go to public readings because I might be there with my camera. It sounds so ridiculous, some of the things that he was saying, but it worked because of the repetition, and because he's not stupid. He was actually making very eloquent arguments. I have to give him credit. He was at times funny. He was very well spoken. That people started questioning whether or not there was validity to the things that he was saying. And then eventually it turned violent, where sexual references to me, he started saying that I was having sex with people that I was interviewing, that was one of the, because I had actually gotten quite a bit of access that was a little unprecedented in the Wikipedia contributors' history. Was, I kind of was, the point was to say, look, we can actually get these things ourselves. We can actually get people to do photographs. We can meet with people. We can interview people. Let's really make this site something that's very interactive and useful, and start actually talking to the people and the things that we cover, and creating this body of knowledge ourselves. That was the whole point behind my work. And what he did was he sort of took that as a sign that I was, getting these interviews through other ways, that I was a drug addict, that I was an alcoholic. Then he started, I was going to give a talk at Columbia University about my work, and he said that I would be attacked if I went there, and just on and on and on. It was just getting crazy.
See, now I would love to take it down that path. I wish the situation didn't exist, but I do want to pursue that line a little bit further. But Lisa, maybe if you can tell us a little bit about your experiences there, and then additional questions together. So can you maybe get into what was your experiences and what have you encountered in working with Wikipedia?
Well, I'd say the most straightforward one is the one I wound up opening an FBI case over. It began with the biography of a private investigator and, ironically enough, former gay porn star named Paul Baresi, and a couple of related articles. This is not a savory area of Wikipedia. It's not an area where I have any actual interest. But sometimes there's requests for assistance of various sorts, and I went over and found that somebody was defaming Mr. Baresi and was defaming other editors and was running multiple accounts in order to try to manipulate on-site discussions about that. These were very clear policy violations. And when I documented the abuse, I put a six-month ban on the person. And very shortly afterward, the individual used the site's email function to ask me how to appeal. Now, I have that going into Gmail, so it doesn't give away my actual location. And I replied, but instead of actually pursuing an appeal, the person continued to email me. And over months, it got to the point where the person was vowing that I would get it when I least expected and sending me graphic fantasies of me being maimed or raped or killed. At that point, I checked out the email headers. I was already aware that the person's ISP resolved to Virginia, so I thought, I'm in San Diego. He's thousands of miles away from me. But I looked into it more carefully and discovered the person was within driving distance of my home. And at that point, I contacted law enforcement.
Now, what can law enforcement do to help you out here?
By any reasonable person standard, these are threats. This is not protected speech. The question is locating this person, preferably intimidating them so that they don't do it again to me or anybody else. But if need be, I would have no problem taking the fellow to court. Obviously, this is someone who, if he detaches from me, I think this kind of person would just go out there and find somebody else to pick on. And there needs to be, how would I put it? There needs to be some boundaries for this kind of behavior.
Well, I guess this is a question for either David or Dorova. At the Wikipedia Foundation, you can't be the first two editors or administrators harassed or hassled by quote unquote disgruntled users.
No.
Is there any steps or processes in place to deal with internet bullying?
In my experience, there is not. It's something that has in researching this, I found it's something that's continually discussed, but. It's inertia works against any change. I also think that the foundation is a little concerned about some of the values of the site, first off, which is making sure that it's a very free and open community. But they also, I think, are concerned about how did as I mentioned, I did at least an hour and a half interview with Eric Mueller over the telephone, and he raises a valid point, is that it's very difficult to try and figure out who is the 30-year-old serial killer and who is the 13-year-old jerk sitting in his mother's basement. But one of the problems is that, at the very least, it should not be able to go to be carried on the site. There's only so much you can do about emails and off-site harassment, but the foundation is not even stopping the harassment that's happening on the site. And I think that that's where I take the basic problem.
Well, to be honest, I'm curious what the difference between a 13-year-old in someone's basement and a 30-year-old potential murderer is when it comes to internet bullying. They're doing the same thing. It's harassment, it's harassment, it's harassment.
Well, if somebody makes a threat to bomb a school, it doesn't matter whether they're 13 or 30. The cultural and the law enforcement take it seriously. And we're stepping forward on behalf of other editors who are not in a position to be as open as we are, and saying, let's not wait until somebody gets assaulted. Because at the rate things are going, we're concerned that that might really happen. Not immediately, and we know that the rates of that are slow, but we don't want to see it go too far. Both David and I, both of our, in both cases, the perpetrator has not been caught yet. And so obviously in positions like this, not very many people would be willing to speak openly about it. We know of other cases, and we're respecting their decisions and their privacy.
Well, actually, I'm not sure if Wikipedia editors or administrators sometimes have a choice about whether to be open or not. I'm actually looking at a page right now that was put up by, actually somebody who's known to the search marketing community, Daniel Brandt, that shows the real names of a number of the avatars used by Wikipedia administrators or editors. How do you guys feel about outside people outing your real names?
Well, I'll tell you what Mr. Brandt's done in the last couple of days. Since I've stepped forward publicly and talked about the threats I've been receiving, Mr. Brandt went out of his way and published the entire list of my Facebook friends.
Yeah, Daniel Brandt has been able to parlay a reputation as a privacy advocate, but he's not. He's more of a privacy thug. He was recently quoted only just like a month or two ago in Business Week as a privacy advocate. But really, what he does is he researches people and he tries to figure out who they are so he can expose them. And even do as much as start posting names of their friends on his website in order to force their hand to do his will. He's really not a privacy advocate. I don't know why he's gotten that.
Last July, he threatened to publish my name and personal information on his website unless I used my administrator tools to block him and to unblock him. And to block somebody who had blocked him. I mean, this was clear-cut coercion. I stood up to it very quickly afterward. We got a coercion clause into Wikipedia's policies. He claims that he doesn't think Wikipedians should be editing anonymously, and that it has something to do with defamation, but he pays no interest in the people who defame us. At another website, not run by Mr. Brandt, somebody put up a recent photograph of my 74-year-old uncle, who survived 9/11 from a high floor, along with my uncle's real name, and a not very subtle threat to harass my uncle if I didn't stop editing Wikipedia. Mr. Brandt shows no interest in finding the identities of people who do that kind of clear water harassment.
Now, that was a posting over at Encyclopedia Dramatica, is that correct?
Yes.
And there's the other aspect of it is that when they do out people, they actually show that people have cause for concern. A very high-ranking arbitrator on our site recently left. He was one of the most high, if not the most highly respected people on Wikipedia. He was respected by critics and by the people on the site as alike. And he protected his identity, for his own reasons. They were never really made known publicly. But when he was discovered, there was no hypocrisy behind his actions. It didn't show him at all in a negative light. And immediately, critics of the site started posting his employer's name on websites, including Daniel Brandt did that as well, and started to question whether or not he was editing Wikipedia on his employer's time, so that if anyone were to, say, a potential client or his employer were to Google his name, On the very first page were questions about what he was doing, whether he was billing clients while he was editing Wikipedia, thus impugning his reputation. Another Daniel Brandt with another administrator on the site threatened to contact her employer because he didn't like some of the things that she was writing that were completely legal, but he just didn't like them. So he was going to contact the employer talking about how inappropriate she was. So they want people to be identified, but then when they actually find out who the people are, they start going after their paycheck. My former employer was threatened as well. Some people going to my former employer, you know, who's no longer my employer. But
Dave has one more question to slip in before we have to go to break. I hope you guys can stick around for a few minutes because this is a massive tin of worms, according to some of the guys in our discussion forum that requires a massive plate of cookies. Dave, you had a quick question?
I do. You bring up good points in this balance. Now, a question I'd have, like I go to a bookstore, pick up a book. I want to know, you know, this author knows what he's talking about. How can Wikipedia address that issue? Obviously, there's some significant concerns with, on the part of administrators, even editors and staff, on having their identities actually known at the same time as somebody who, you know, I visit Wikipedia, and it's gained a reputation as an authority. So how do you sort of address that need for, I want to know that the person that I am reading is somebody that is knowledgeable, is trustable in this space?
Lisa, do you want to take that or do you want me to?
Well, no, I can. Wikimedia Foundation set things up with a certain privacy policy, and if somebody wants to petition them in a legitimate manner to alter that, then that's fine. But I think that strong-arming individual volunteers is entirely the wrong way to go about it. And note that both David's harasser or stalker and mine were the people who were trying to put bad derogatory information into biographies of living persons. He and I got targeted because we were trying to stop that. We were trying to keep the site honest. We were trying to serve the people that Wikipedia articles depict properly. And we have been targeted on a very personal level because of that decision.
Okay, I have to take us out to a break right now. We've cut over time, and we're going to be going over time on the show. Sorry, studio. Friends, this is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from BeanstalkSEO.com. We have two Wikipedia administrators on the show talking about harassment and some of the internet bullying in cyberspace. Stay tuned. We'll be back on Webcology after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
Hey, what's that sound coming from your computer?
That's the sound of me making money with referback.com. They've shown me how to... Referback.com show me how to turn clicks on my existing site into cash. Referback gives you free banners, mailers, even your own personal account manager.
Oh, can they help me make money off my blog too?
Absolutely. Your websites, your blogs, they can all be making you money. You can even earn 50% commission on your first month. Put some into your website. Just visit referback.com.
When it comes to finding the right customers with the right keywords, all you have to remember is ABC Search. ABC Search is the world's largest privately held pay-per-click network, giving advertisers the best pay-per-click traffic. With over 6 billion searches a month and industry-leading protection using ClickShield, their patent-pending fraud identification software, you can trust ABC Search to deliver the best possible traffic. When thinking about PPC and publisher solutions, all you need to remember is ABC Search. Quality partners, quality search, abcsearch.com.
Dude, fishing in Costa Rica is going to be awesome.
Amen, bro. Now that ValueClick Media had netted FastClick, we've got one of the largest online advertising networks fishing us for big bucks. You know, while we're out catching snapper.
Hey, Steve, you're coming too, right?
No, I'm still using bannersrus.com. I can't afford to be away.
You've got to work with ValueClick Media. I got this great account manager who's easy to work with, and they have access to the best advertisers and earn me high rates.
Don't worry. We'll bring back pictures.
Yeah, terrific.
Visit ValueClick Media now and click on Solutions for Publishers for more more details. Value Click Media.
Business is changing, and new marketing avenues are opening up every day. WebmasterRadio.fm wants to give you the market edge. Join host Larry Weber as he speaks to the innovators and trendsetters who are taking us to a new age of social media, e-communities, and the blogosphere. Market Edge with Larry Weber, Tuesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on demand after the show inside the Internet Marketing Channel, only on WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
Find the WebmasterRadio.fm Web 2.0 watering hole and have a drink on us. WebmasterRadio.fm is now on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. Find us now on the WebmasterRadio.fm homepage.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Welcome back to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. Friends, this is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from BeatSuckSEO.com. We have on the line David Shankbone and Lees Boer, otherwise known as Darova from Wikipedia. Friends, we're back, and we were kind of left with the question of credibility. I'm going to re-paraphrase the question on Dave's behalf. How do Wikipedia users know that the editors or administrators really know their subjects?
Well, if I could back up Lisa with what she was sort of saying with another avenue is. You know, we're not supposed to really be, we're not supposed to actually, the information isn't supposed to be coming from us. We're more conduits. There should be citations to, if there's a particular piece of information that you're wondering whether or not it's credible, it should have a citation behind it that you can actually go and check who that person is. So who put it there? It shouldn't make a difference if it was Lisa or Jim Hedger or myself. It should be coming from a published source. There's certain information that you don't need, like the sky is blue. You don't need a citation for that. But if it's controversial, you should have one.
But then we get cases like the infamous SJ, the student who was trying to fob himself off as a professor and a true expert in medieval history.
But nobody actually, I haven't seen anything online where they actually question the information that SJ has put up. It's all about who he was or was not, not saying, so look at all of this wrong information that he actually put onto Wikipedia. I don't think that he was actually citing to SJ himself. He was just saying, he was just purporting to be someone who was a knowledgeable expert on the subject. But I haven't seen where anyone's gone and said, now look at all of these SJ edits, and I can actually prove that they're all wrong and that the information is incorrect.
He was a young guy in his early 20s who was putting on a persona online, like a lot of people do. And he did superb work for the project in many respects. He also made, because he was in his early 20s and he didn't know the world of journalism very well, he made a terrible mistake of lying about his background to a reporter from The New Yorker. Now, once he also later went to work for the Wikimedia Foundation. When he did, he posted a correction and a disclosure on his page. But of all the people to lie about your background to, a Pulitzer-winning journalist for The New Yorker, I don't think he realized, as young as he was, what that meant. And I'm very sorry it played out the way it did, because he really was a superb volunteer in every other respect.
Well, let's shift gears for a second. I want to get back to the harassment and cause for harassment. Now, Wikipedia has been, or a couple of years ago at any rate, was seen by a lot of people in the search marketing community as a conduit to extraordinary links and thus extraordinary wealth. And Wikipedia dealt with that by applying nofollow to many of the links coming out of there. But as I understand it, many people in the search marketing community tried to start muscling editors, muscling administrators to get their way on Wikipedia. Is that correct?
I'm not so sure if it's people in the search marketing area who really muscle in that regard. It tends to be more ideological. I know for one arbitration case, I documented an extensive off-site coordination campaign by a certain ideological group, I don't know if I'll mention it, to bring people onto Wikipedia in massive numbers to pursue a particular ideology. And the editors who are, you know, the regular people who are committed to the site and had written featured articles, administrators and so forth, were really getting flooded to the point where they were frustrated and they were at the end of the rope. That's a problem.
I think it's just people who have an interest in having information seen in one light or another. It's not always ideological. I dealt with one with the marketing director of a law firm up in Boston, who had come under fire for taking on a controversial case, and Harvard Law School would not let them come onto their campus to recruit. This was a very well-cited section on their article on Wikipedia about this law firm, and it was notable. They continually try to take it off, and they tried to strong-arm me. They wanted me to call them. They, they sort of made allusions to further action, especially legal action. That's another very common thing. And it's like, in the end, get the Boston Herald to not report about it if you don't want this to be known, or don't take the case.
Now, I guess here's kind of a pointed question then. It sounds to me like, your stories are not unique.
Not at all.
From what you're mentioning, if, let's say, one of your friends came up to you and said, I'm thinking of joining as an editor and hoping, to work my way up, would you recommend they even join, or is it just too, is Wikipedia sort of almost doomed, if not for people who would keep doing it, but who would want to, if this is what you're setting yourself up for?
Well, let's put this into
who would want to do that?
If you don't mind. We're talking about a very, very small core of Wikipedia's most prolific volunteers. I think one of the 400 most prolific editors out of millions. And if you go in and you see a typographical error, go ahead and fix it. If you want to write an article, go ahead and fix it. 99% of the articles, you'll never run into anything like this. If you step forward in controversial areas in a visible way, the way that David and I have and the way that some of the other very dedicated people have, then yes, the odds of this go up. If something is controversial in the real world, it will be controversial in Wikipedia.
I remember from an interview you and I did about a year ago, Lise, there's about 30,000 edits that happen at Wikipedia per month. Actually, I'm sorry, there was about 5,000 edits per day, and this was a year ago. In that number, there's going to be a certain number of people who disagree with the edits. But what I'm curious about is, why is this so important to them?
I think it's that people who are not fully rational often have a better instinct than normal people for power relationships. They see where power is, and they see where vulnerability is. And Wikipedia has both in spades. Now, I don't know whether maybe MySpace and Facebook and some other places, what you guys would call in the SEO field power users, might experience similar things. I'm on a couple of these other sites, although not to the extent that I am on Wikipedia. And for the most part, people are shy about talking about it, because if you step forward, you make yourself more of a target. So it's a tough decision.
Wikipedia seems to go out of its way to try to create a very democratic culture within its volunteer base. Is that very democratic culture one of the reasons it has difficulty reacting to issues of harassment?
I think it is. I mean, in my experience, and in other people's experience, I actually talked to quite a few people about their own experiences. Is you kind of have a schizophrenic reaction to the harassment and the stalking. Any time that you've gotten into an argument with someone online on Wikipedia, and then they see you later on sort of struggling dealing with something, they may agree with the harassment. There's another group of people, and I have to give credit to Darova here, as she's one of those people who simply does not tolerate the harassment and stalking at all. And they'll actually put themselves on the line and risk becoming a target of the stalkers and the harassers themselves by stepping in. But then there's a third that are sort of anti-censorship. And even though they don't think harassment and stalking should happen, you know, they want to almost endlessly discuss the principle of whether or not we should even have the remove these messages, or whether that would be what's the principle? Does this go too far, or is this just criticism? And some people take harassment as criticism, and some people take criticism as harassment. And you know, it should be pretty obvious when one is the other.
I don't think that there's any legitimate criticism in saying you may be violently attacked, David, if you attend an event at Columbia University.
Exactly. That's the problem.
Nothing to do with building an encyclopedia.
Violent threats should be a low bar to be able to define harassment. And what really the community needs to figure out is say, okay, well, at the very least, can we all agree that this is a low bar, repeated violent threats? You know, that doesn't seem to have any intellectual purpose.
Wikipedia is a mirror of the larger culture, and unfortunately, harassment and stalking are an area where it is still socially acceptable to blame the victim. If you say, my car got stolen, you're going to get a straightforward response. You don't have to explain to people that car theft exists. You don't have to defend yourself against people who say that you brought the car theft onto yourself, or that you're just raising claims of car theft in order to draw attention to yourself. We want to get it to where clear-cut cases that have a potential for real-world manifestation are handled on about the same level, because they're actually more serious than car theft.
Now, if these issues can't be addressed, are we setting, or is Wikipedia basically being set up by no fault of their own, in a scenario where the bad guys win? Like Lisa, you had mentioned that, you know, as long as you stick to this 99%, you're not going to encounter any problems. It's only when you head into these areas, apparently, although I wouldn't have necessarily predicted it, making some fairly minor edits to a gay porn entry. Is it really being set up that in these areas the bad guys are going to win, and unless you're editing something on, you know, the population of African elephants or something like that, you're really setting yourself up for a problem?
Do you have an answer to that, David?
Well, I think sometimes the Michael Lucas issue is kind of a strange one, because I didn't know Michael very well at the time that I made that correction. And because I was coming into contact with a lot of people, including, you know, I interviewed Al Sharpton, and I interviewed the president of PETA, Ingrid Newkirk. I interviewed a lot of the president of the ACLU, a lot of people who were very controversial. And, for me, like, correcting some errors, because I would always be immediately met with, these are the things that are wrong on my page, and I would, you know, and I would try and check them. I didn't really even know, Michael Lucas's whole background. I didn't know the columns that he wrote that had upset people. And for me, they were such basic, minor edits that I didn't really even think two things about it, you know. So it's... It's hard. It's you don't know what's controversial to one person or another. And Wikipedia is really much more. It's a mirror for our society. It's become sort of society itself, symbolic. You have people who exist out there on criticism sites who have never gotten over the fact that they've been banned from editing Wikipedia. Most of us, if we were banned from a website, we would say, well, screw you too. You know, I'll go somewhere else. But with Wikipedia, it has this different place in people's imaginations and what it symbolizes, and it's almost like they've been banned from society. And they spend years then, complaining about their banning and complaining about Wikipedia on these sites, like they've never, ever gotten over it. You know, it's strange. It's definitely
a
different website. It's,
though,
you know, it means
that.
Something different than most places do.
You know what? It's also kind of chancy who an unstable person would decide to target. I mean, I had gone over to the Michael Lucas biography. I mean, I don't really edit the general topic of gay porn, but once in a while I do dispute resolution.
And me neither, by the way.
And there had been a request for comment, and I was answering lots of requests for comment, and I went over there, and there's a question of self-published material from this blog, can that be accepted? I mean, you know, just dry stuff having nothing to do with the content of what is proper citation. And I answered that. No problem. And there was a second request for comment several months later. I answered that, too. And I might have interacted with the same person at that time. I know I interacted with the same person later on when the individual targeted David, and I began reverting graphic sexual fantasies about him, the threat at Columbia University, other stuff. On a sister project, I had to protect several pages. I'm an administrator there. And the person never singled me out for the same kind of abuse as David. So it's a bit chancy, even when you have somebody who's a live wire. I guess they only have resources to target so many people at a time.
And Jim, the other issue is that, you know, it's what I call the William French Anderson problem. William French Anderson was a very famous geneticist who's responsible for a lot of breakthroughs in the area of genetics. And he was, you know, recently imprisoned for pedophilia. He molested a co-worker's, a colleague's daughter, I think it was. And there's if you go to his article, at least, you know, especially right after he was convicted of this molestation, there was this huge paragraph about the molestation. But there was very little about his genetic work, and it's a challenge for a lot of people because genetics is a very difficult area for a lot of people to write on casually. But you have a very motivated group of people who dislike the man for what he was convicted of. So a lot of times, the areas that most need the attention of a neutral editor to go in there and make corrections and make sure that you know an objectionable person is at least portrayed neutrally and accurately are the areas that would most likely make you the target, you know, and you could very well see if you're going in there saying, look, you guys are really hanging this guy out to dry, you know, and his entire article is about this one event in his life. There's a lot of people who would sit and would automatically start pegging you as a defender of pedophiles and possibly a pedophile yourself, even though you're just trying to actually just, you know, do knowledge justice. And that's what I call the William French Anderson problem on Wikipedia.
Indeed, that's a great explanation of said problem. We're running very short on time. I just got a message from studio that I have maybe one or two questions I can get in, and I'm going to have to invite both of you back because I don't think we've even scratched the surface of this topic. A quick question for Durova. How many other Wikipedia editors or administrators, this is an estimation, have had to step down because of harassment? And has intervening in harassment ever actually worked to stop the harassment?
Let's see here. I think it has worked to stop the harassment because I know there have... I guess it depends on how attached the individual gets to the target or to the subject. And the best way is to demonstrate very early on when they're testing the boundaries that boundaries exist and that they will be enforced regularly. And if you can do that, if it happens on site, and it often does, if you do that swiftly and firmly, you know, without engaging in the person emotionally, then very often they just move on and they find whatever else they do with their lives, they go and do that. And in terms of an estimate, overall numbers, I don't want to say. I know that I'm one of the people that informally people come to when they have a problem because they know I take it seriously.
Well, should the foundation take this problem more seriously?
I think they do. I think they're not sure what to do. And I think what's needed is awareness and advocacy and better laws because most of the laws were written pre-internet in static things where you have, you know, some ex-husband with a domestic violence background and to protect an ex-wife and children in that situation. That doesn't translate so well into situations where it's so easy to cross jurisdictional lines. even when you're physically close enough to have something done, and where you have individuals who facilitate the harassment by tactically disclosing information that a person who's already a stalking can utilize. That is a level that we need to address.
I mean, David, is there anything that other webmasters can do to help out somebody in your situation?
I think that the primary thing is that they need to come up with standards. Jimmy Wales and Tim O'Reilly talked about this during the Kathy Siegel mess. Is that, you know, we really shouldn't be talking to, we should be all communicating with each other online as if we were sitting across the table from each other. So I think for webmasters, it's coming up with standards of communication, and they shouldn't really be any different than if we were in person with each other. And yes, things can get heated, but, you know, it's, you know, most people don't talk to each other the way they talk to each other online. And I think that that's what webmasters really should be doing, is coming up with a set of guidelines and principles and making sure people follow them without, you know, without fail.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it at that. We've run out of time on yet another hour. But I'd like to invite both of you back on a future show. As I said, I don't think we've even come close to scratching the surface on this. David and Durova, thank you both very much for being on Webcology today.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Friends, this has been Webcology on WebmasterRadio.fm. We were talking about the issues that Wikipedia editors and administrators face when it comes to harassment. This is a real problem online, and we could cite dozens of different examples. Next week, we're going to be doing a show geared towards SES Toronto. It's going to be a phenomenal conference. I hope to see a lot of you folks there. Dave, Brotherman, till next week, enjoy the sudden sunshine.
Indeed, and enjoy your flight.
This is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO. Stay tuned to WebmasterRadio.fm. We got more great content coming up after these messages.